are listening to Up to Me Radio, the best in inspirational talk radio. It's up to me.
This is Beth, health and wellness specialist, along with Dr. Scott Clitheroe. And let me tell you, we are so pumped about today's show. But before we get into that, Scott, I have to ask you, are you ready for this heat that we've seen in Texas the past couple of days?
Oh, I was out in the yard on Sunday, Beth, and I just had this sense that it's summer. You know, that sense that it was the heat and the humidity were just a little bit more than they have been. And I was like, oh, I know what that means. Summer is here.
Bam. Summer is here. Okay. Now let's move on to today's show, because today we're going to talk about back care. And most of us have some sort of back pain at some point in our lives. I actually think I read that up to 85% of people have some form of back pain in their lifetime. It may do to a sports-related injury, an accident, a condition such as scoliosis. But from what I read, that upper or lower back pain develops during the course of day-to-day life. Things like repetitive activities at work or at home, such as sitting at a computer or lifting and carrying, can produce tension and muscle tightness that result in backache. Fortunately, there's a lot we can do to prevent this sort of problem, and I am beyond thrilled to have our two guests today. That's right, I said two guests. We've never done that before. So I will introduce Sylvia Diley, who is a chiropractor as well as an orthopedic associate provider for the Musculoskeletal Institute at UT Health in Austin, Texas. As a chiropractor and rehab specialist, she brings a unique perspective to the assessment and care of patients. Sylvia is passionate about empowering patients with the knowledge and skills to help themselves, and she strives to provide individualized care that comes from understanding each patient's needs and goals.
And Beth, I have the distinct pleasure of introducing my friend and colleague, Mark Krault. Dr. Mark Krault is a graduate of the University of Texas at Austin, where I was had the pleasure of knowing him back in the old days. And then he went on to receive his medical degree from the University of Texas Southwestern Medical School. For more than 20 years, Mark has specialized in the treatment of spinal pain and injuries. He completed his residency in physical medicine and rehab at the University of Texas Southwestern Medical School in Dallas. And he attained a subspecialty in pain medicine from the American Board of Physical Medicine and Rehab. Mark is a member of the North American Spine Society and the American Academy of Physical Medicine and Rehab. And Mark, we're just delighted to have you and Sylvia on the show.
Thank you.
I'm happy to be here.
In the intro, and I know I personally have had severe back pain two times in my life, enough to say that I never want to experience that ever again. But Mark, can you tell us how common is back pain?
Well, Beth, yeah, you started by saying that, you know, up to 80% of people have it at one point in their life. And that's about what the literature says. 80% of people have back pain at one point in their life. And the good news is that most people get better, really regardless of intervention. But then the rub is that many times it comes back. And so they say that up to 70% have recurrent back pain and 20% develop chronic back pain.
Since it's so common, there must be some common causes. So what are some of the common causes of back pain?
So I'd like to talk about that in broad strokes. So we think about back pain falling into two categories. One is structural or tissue issues. These are the things most of us think of, like a bulging disc or a pinched nerve or arthritis. And then the second type of problem is a pain problem. This might be when pain in your back behaves more like when you have a headache or a stomach ache. This is pain that just seems to show up for no good reason or seems to behave consistently. And when we think about screening or assessing or figuring this out, we like to try to sort out, is this a structural or tissue problem? And then we want to see what are the serious types of pathology that go with these kinds of problems. And see if there's any nerve root pathology that goes with these kinds of problems. And because we want to do this screening because with these problems, we have a clear sense of the treatment and management and testing that goes with those kinds of problems. So I want to let Dr. Corrales or Mark here talk about maybe those most unusual but serious, just to give the people a sense of that.
Yeah, so we work together, and the philosophy we have is really trying to go methodically through what is the cause of this person's back pain, because if you don't understand where the pain's coming from, then you have a hard time trying to treat it. So the first thing is to make sure nothing serious is going on. I think most of our patients come in with back pain, think, oh, it's got to be cancer, and the truth is that's very, very uncommon. The only risk factor for having cancer as a cause of back pain is a personal history of back pain. No other symptom has found to associate. So that's really rare, and it accounts for much less than 1% of the cases of back pain are caused by cancer. There's also rare, and someone had a history of a recent procedure to the spine, or someone's had a history of IV drug use or something. But those are also very rare. The other catastrophic things was having almost a spinal cord injury from a huge disc herniation. Again, this is very rare, and you'd have it's very obvious with the case of something called catecholaminoid syndrome, where you have dramatic weakness in the legs, you have bowel and bladder problems. So those are all really rare conditions that we check out first to make sure that those aren't going on. And then after that, we say, okay, the rest of it is, quote unquote, benign back pain. Now it's a matter of finding out, where is this pain coming from? And that's where we go through the process that I think Sylvia's going to talk about at one point. So are you following us, Scott and Beth?
Yeah, oh, yeah. Of course.
No, I gotcha.
Yeah.
There's other things, what about a fracture? And a fracture, of course, are trauma, so we can see that. Or in an older person with osteoporosis, or someone, as Scott, taking steroids can weaken the bones, and so we think about that. But again, those are pretty, I'm going to say obvious, but they can be obvious in the setting. And there are also always some really rare things that can cause back pain in the sense of like rheumatologic conditions like ankylosing spondylitis. And even more rare, something in the stomach or pelvis could be radiating to the back. But these are all really rare conditions. And by going through the next part at one point, Sylvia's going to talk about how we go through these back pain patients and put them through a series of, I would say, movements and testing what makes this bit worse, what makes it better. And we can kind of get an idea of exactly where this individual patient's pain is coming from. Does that make sense?
Absolutely.
Yeah, it does. I mean, when do you decide to seek medical advice? And then, x-rays are so commonly used for back problems. What can you give us a thought about when imaging is needed and when it's not?
Well, yeah. So, imaging, the most important, I would say, determining factor is not imaging. It's actually what the patient tells us, or when this pain started, what it feels like, where is it, what makes it better, what makes it worse, and then our exam, moving the patient, moving the tissue, and seeing how it responds to what we call stress and loading and unloading maneuvers. X-ray and MRI are a tool. They're part of the equation, but a lesser part of the equation. Scott, X-rays come with a lot of radiation. Radiation can increase the likelihood for cancer. So unless we really see something like we think it's a fracture, we tend to avoid x-rays. They do have the role, like we are suspicious of one of the things I was saying, like a fracture or someone have a history of cancer, but in that case, we're probably going with an MRI. But the problem with imaging is it shows us a lot of things that aren't significant. By our 40s, it says that up to 50% of people will have disc bulges or disc protrusions that don't have any symptoms. So they did studies on patients without pain and put them in a scanner and found, like I said, 40% have disc degeneration or 50% have disc bulges. Even disc herniations are seen in up to 20 to 50% of people that don't have pain. So images can make you more confused or make you think that, oh, it must be my disc, but in fact, that has very little to do with it. Again, the most important thing is, as we've always learned, Scott, in medical school, what the patient tells us, the history and the exam, is which is where Sylvia, I think, is going to come in here and tell us how we methodically go through that. Sylvia, you ready to roll?
You know, Mark, I got to say that you taught me that, you know, a while back, that study. And so every once in a while, a patient will be talking about the fact that they've got a disc, you know, issue, and as far as no symptoms, but they've just been told that. And I tell them that. And it's, sometimes it's hard for lay people to get their, you know, to get their brain around that, you know, just because you have an x-ray or an MRI finding of a disc protrusion doesn't necessarily mean that's the cause of your pain. That's pretty hard. And I don't know if some physicians are clear about that when they talk to patients about it, I guess. I mean, I know you guys are, but I think that's a really important point, that sometimes the x-ray findings don't correlate with what the patient's having, right? I mean, correlation. I know they're not causation, they're correlation, right? They just happen to be both present, but not maybe one causing the other.
Scott, I think not a day goes by when we don't pull up a graph from a 2014 study where they did, again, healthy, like 1,400 healthy, pain-free subjects, and put them in the scanner. And they have this thing that we show a chart in your 20s, in your 40s, in your 60s, in your 80s. By the time you're in your 80s, I think it's close to 100% of disc degeneration. These are without pain. You know, in our 40s and 50s, where most of our patients come in, you know, we have that, I want to say, 50% range of disc bulges and disc degeneration and disc protrusion. So you go, look, this is normal. We tell people, especially disc degeneration, it's like your hair grain or getting wrinkles. This is normal. Yeah. I tell people, if you look down the street and you go, that guy looks around 80, that girl looks around 40, that girl looks around 10, it'd be very unusual to see a 10-year-old that looks 80 or an 80-year-old that looks 10. You know, we have normal changes. So when you see an MRI, you go, that MRI looks around 30 or that MRI looks around 60. It doesn't mean anything about pain. It's no correlation to what the pain is actually coming from. And again, like I said, we have a graph we pull up. I could probably give it to you for your show if you want to. From that 2014 study.
Yeah.
So just to see, so you can see, wow, okay, this is and so why do doctors or well-meaning providers or medical health say it's a disc, they're true, it is disc degeneration. But it's the meaning behind that is not true. I think some patients like to have an explanation, oh, it's my disc, I have these degenerated discs. But I think that thought process causes more harm from a health standpoint than good. And again, that's a whole point of our program, is to say, to kind of demystify it or to correct these myths. You know, this is what you come in thinking, this is it, my degenerative disc, but it doesn't behave like that. And to disempower the imaging. So we spend a lot of time disempowering imaging with knowledge. And so this is an important point, and we'll probably come back to it by the end of this podcast.
One of the ways that we help patients come to grips with that, like you were saying, is that a patient might come in and say, hey, I've been told I have this bulge at L4 or 5, and then they proceed to talk to us about, you know, my pain is worse when I stand and I walk, and it's better when I sit. And then I inform them, well, look, this is how a spine moves, and when you bend is actually when you load the disc. And so that your pattern actually doesn't sound like discogenic pain. And so you start to help them see that. More often than not, in our exam, we're using movements, bending forward, bending backwards, sideways. And part of the exam, especially if somebody has been through seeing several providers and they don't feel like they've been assessed correctly or their pain is persistent, we may have them repeat movements to see the effect on the spine. And so part of that helps the patient go, wow, you're right. I bent for you 10 times and my back pain didn't get worse. So we would expect an injured disc or a symptomatic disc to get worse with repeated loading. Just like if, you know, you sprained your ankle, it should hurt to run or to jump on it. And so we can do the same kind of testing with an arthritic joint or a pinched nerve. There are ways to sort of prove or disprove the pain pattern. And that experience is usually really informative for patients.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I have to say, again, speaking as a physician who's not a specialist like y'all are, I mean, I learned so much from y'all. I think a lot of primary care doctors could probably, you know, continually use some updating. I'm sure y'all sometimes have to like Mark said, deprogram the patients from what they were maybe told by the primary care doctor, innocently enough, but sometimes they get some information that may not be quite accurate. If a patient has mild back pain, it doesn't seem to have any of those warning signs that Mark was talking about, what would y'all suggest for somebody who's, you know, just waking up with some nagging problems, maybe nothing serious? What should they, where should they go before maybe even starting to go down the road of seeking out a specialist or primary care? What can they do for their back?
You know, we all naturally do this. If you like hit your shin on the coffee table or you fall, eventually we start to move the joint, test it. Hey, can I bend? Can I move it? Load it? And so back pain is the same way. But in some ways, we're really hardwired to be to respect pain and to see it as an alarm signal. But the best way to understand it is to really do like a self-exam. Oh, it hurt me that one time to bend. Is that every time I bend? Oh, is it only to this depth? Oh, is it only when I'm lifting a child? So those, and that kind of information for the provider is really useful. Again, when we have these structural problems, there should be a consistent behavior that we see or a consistent pattern that we see of loading and stressing the tissue to give us feedback. And so it's really, really hard to damage your spine. It's very deep in your body. It has lots of fail safes around, like your all your muscles and all your ligaments. They're all there to protect you. So, but that's just how it goes for folks.
You know, again, when I hurt my back, yeah, I was an athlete. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, go, Dale.
No, I was going to say when I was an athlete, I actually did a back handspring, which I had done thousands of times, and my back literally just went out and took me to my knees. And looking back, I actually think I didn't stretch out that morning because I, you know, I'm an athlete. I don't need to stretch. That's the most underrated form of exercise there is. But can you recommend, or when should we really worry about back pain?
Well, you know, that's the thing. So most back, you know, actually that when pain gets better, no matter who you see, you know, physician, chiropractor, physical therapist, massage therapist, et cetera, within a month or two. And so, you know, the people tend to choose, say, I went to provider X, or I tried, you know, supplement Y, and I got better within a few weeks. When the truth of the matter, human body is an amazing healer, and it gets better most of the time. So when we, in our program, you know, we look for, like Sylvia talked about, okay, everybody's gonna get better. Can we make better faster? Can we find those positions of relief that we can find the body movement or find another stretch that makes you feel more comfortable while your body's doing its thing? So when we don't see this pattern of gradual improvement, especially in response to, you know, a big intervention, or if something were to get worse, of course, then we start saying, okay, not behaving like the others. You know, we start looking for that less than 1%. Or maybe if the other difference would be someone has something called a radiculopathy, where pain is going into the leg, or with weakness, if anything's getting progressively worse, instead of getting better, I'm getting progressively worse, which is atypical for any structural condition like a disc or a foramen stenosis, anything compressing the nerve, then we say, oh, that's an immediate timeout, and we need to find out what's happened because it's atypical. Or if you have something that looks like in the compressed nerve, like radiculopathy, and it's just not responding to treatment. Those are the unlikely. I think this literature says 5% of people don't respond into needing surgery. So anything, again, not responding to intervention or anything getting worse, and the things that not respond, you know, typically MRIs are not recommended for at least 6 weeks from the onset, especially after you've completed some intervention for that. To answer your question?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
So, yeah. So, you know, getting worrisome things are obviously if you had progressive neurologic, getting weaker, getting numb, loss of bowel bladder, fever, something else that, you know, distant pain. So, you know, nothing new should be added to the equation, and things should be generally getting better over time.
You know, that's, I think that's helpful. Again, I think it's just, you know, people sometimes go, well, you know, they want to, especially now in the coronavirus time, as we know that people are avoiding going to the doctor, which is understandable, but yet we'd like to make sure, oh, hey, you can't sit on this. It's good to kind of get to get checked out. So that's, I think that's very helpful. Now I was going to ask you, it sounds like based on what Beth said at the beginning and what you said, Mark, too, that being a human being is a risk factor for back pain, because it sounds like most people have it in their life. But what else, I mean, but you know, what are some other risk factors that, you know, that leads you to be more likely to have back pain? And so what are some things that people can do to maybe reduce the risk of having back problems down the road?
I think, you know, there are things that we all know that are generally about health. Like if you smoke, if you're obese, if you're not, these are generally risk type factors for back pain. And interestingly, there's also psychosocial risk factors for back pain. If you hate your job, you're more likely to have back pain. If you have mood disorders, you're more likely to have back pain. Anything else you can think of to add to that list, Mark?
And good evidence to support that losing weight has any effect on whether you'll get a disc herniation or not. So we encourage you from a general health standpoint, but it's not going to necessarily prevent you from having back pain. The back pain tends to affect all comers, regardless of any factor as far as health factor or economic factor or anything else you can imagine.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Well, we kind of harp on that, right, Beth? I mean, you know, what you know, just trying to stay fit and healthy and keeping the weight off is important for so many things. And of course, smoking, that's fascinating. I wonder why smoking, any idea why smoking increases your risk of back pain? I mean, is it a blood supply issue or hard to pin down?
No, I mean, I think it has to do with oxygenation of your tissue. So that's,
yeah,
a lot of times if you're going in for joint replacement surgery, you're asked to quit smoking because we know it delays healing.
Yeah.
Think it might be, you know, more complex than just that, but that we know that it's related to that.
Yeah.
But for acute back pain, I'm not sure there's good literature to support that even stopping smoke prevents you from getting acute low back pain. You know, mm-hmm. the thing we haven't talked about too much now is this chronic back pain, which is really 20% of the population and probably the more common reason why people go to a back pain specialist is this kind of chronic mm-hmm. or chronic recurrent back pain. And that's, you know, we haven't really talked too much. Sylvia mentioned at the beginning, but there's, I'll go and reinforce it here. There's really two types of back pain that humans experience. You know, one is just, we call this mechanical pain. Like Beth said, you know, I did this flip and I had immediate pain. So it's, you know, this characteristic of a tissue injury. It's usually I did something, not always, but I did this and I had immediate pain. And it's right, very localized, or it has a pattern. And that when I bend, it hurts. When I get up, it feels better. So I can turn it off and on. It goes away completely, just shut. And it usually gets better week to week to week. And so by 2 to 3 months, usually, you know, back to normal. It's like Sylvia mentioned, the twisted ankle. You twist an ankle and you hobble around for two, then it gets better. And a month or so, you're back to normal. You're back to playing your sport. So when pain continues past 3 months, we have to say, okay, time out. What's going on here? I guess, you know, I tell patients, even if you broke a bone, if you lived in a third world country, it would heal eventually. It may heal funny, but it heals. So human body is an incredible healer. So if you're still having pain, what's going on here? And we ask those same questions and say, what does it look like? And is it come and go, or is it constant? And can you reproduce it? Is it consistently reproduced? You say, well, my ankle hurts. You need to start when I step on it. Now it hurts even if I don't step on it. Even if I'm resting, it still bothers me. So we're looking for these things. Can we stretch or stress the tissue and reproduce it? And de-stress or unload or rest in and feel better. At 2 to 3 month mark, there's something that we call central sensitization. The nervous system kind of takes over and the pain becomes less predictable, less consistent. I can't always make it worse. It's there most all the time. Some days worse than others. I really can't do, I can't, movements in my body do not consistently aggravate it or relieve it. I almost can never get a comfortable position. Sometimes it behaves, you know, like a headache where it comes and goes. I don't know what the hell I'm doing. I'm one day and the next day is not. I'm here for a week. So we look for these patterns. And this chronic pain, this nervous system pattern. So when we try to explain this concept of central sensitization, they're kind of saying, what is that you're talking about? Is that what you could say? I'm still trying to work together. I'm going to float you the question just to have you talk, because I've been talking for a long time.
I don't know what question you're asking me.
Well, I'm kind of riffing on central sensitization here. So the concept, I don't know how much, I mean, I've lost you guys. Are you still with me?
Yeah, this is great. Yeah.
So I don't know how far to go down this rabbit hole, but central sensitization is the idea where the nervous system becomes primarily excited and is a primary pain generator. And the pain behaves, either constant, very commonly. It's commonly the character changes from sharp to this kind of dull, firm, aching, or tight pain. The people have this chronic neck pain or chronic low back pain, and it kind of comes and goes. And I really can't, again, movement, I can't make it worse or better. It's kind of there all the time. It's a little better if I do this, a little worse if I do that, but it's really there all the time. And we, as on an exam, we put patients through a series of movements like Sylvia was talking about to see if we can determine a pattern. Can we find a pattern? We're trying to do one or two things, make you better. We're all, can we make you worse? At least in a pattern that makes sense to us.
Figure it out, yeah.
Yeah.
And so sometimes we can, and in the chronic pain, in sensitive, you cannot. You cannot find a consistent pattern. And the idea is that the nervous system is the primary pain generator. It's kind of, we talk about being overexcited or an over-upregulated state. And so I kind of give the example of, maybe have low, medium, and high sedentary. I think another thing is like there's a low blood sugar and normal blood sugar and a high blood cell diabetes and low thyroid, high back. So we have these low, medium, and high settings. And I think the nervous systems can be thought of the same way, having kind of this low tone and setting with symptoms there, having a normal tone without symptoms, and having kind of upregulated too much activity in the nervous system with, or maybe too much juice in the nerves, you can kind of say. So you have this kind of chronic tension and tightness.
Yeah.
So that's it in a very nutshell, but I'm sure there please ask questions if you have anything related to that.
You know, my last question, and I'd like to hear from both of you, but before I ask my last question,
yeah.
I think everyone knows I love promoting health and wellness and healthy lifestyles to folks, and I think it's a team approach. And you two are part of a multidisciplinary team approach to back pain. Can you both tell us a little bit about that?
Sure. So we're both together at the University of Texas at Austin at the Musculoskeletal Institute. This is the clinical arm. But in fact, I met in a multidisciplinary practice where we thought we were doing a great job. We all had our individual practices, but we co-managed patients a lot. And so we learned a lot about what other folks were doing. I learned a lot about what surgeons do and physical medicine doctors do. The physical therapist and the chiropractors practiced more similarly. So there was a lot of active care, really interesting group. But now in the context that we are in, we're practicing together in real time, which has required a more thorough understanding about how Mark might be in screening a patient. And he understands a lot more about how I might be in screening a patient. And then we both understand a lot more about how a behavioral health provider, who we also have on our team, might see and screen a patient. So we're really, our appointments, you might meet me and the social worker all in one appointment if your problem necessitated that or you needed feedback from all of us.
And so we kind of about who, when you treat back pain, who do you need? And so put all those people in one building in one room and have the patient be in the room and all of us go see them. So that's patients, physically patient-centered. So they, when the patients come to the musculoskeletal integrated practice unit or IPU, we have Sylvia, who's a chiropractor there. We have a physical therapist. We have a social worker who does behavioral health and cognitive behavioral training. And myself with the MD in pain medicine. And the patient occupies the room and we go in and out. So they may see 1, 2, 3, 4 of us all at the same time. So we it's multidisciplinary, but in real time. I think it's a great model. And we actually, you mentioned earlier, what do you do in telemedicine and actually going team pages in their virtual room, and it's been going really well.
Yeah. I bet the patients responded to it because, again, these, the patient-centered, their patient feels like they're part of the process and everybody's on the same page, and they're kind of the center of that universe when they're in the clinic with y'all. They're, everybody's kind of revolving around them and coming in, and that's got to be a very special, rewarding time, especially for chronic back pain patients who probably felt shut around a little bit maybe or not listened to all the time, so that must be very empowering for them.
We're measuring outcomes, with, and so one of our things we're trying to do is measure outcomes and see how we're doing so far.
Yeah.
The hard thing is getting patients to fill them out, but the ones who have filled them out have been very positive.
Yeah, that's awesome. That's awesome. I mean, hopefully people who are listening can advocate for this in their own communities, because I think it's a great, I think it's the wave of the future for all sorts of problems. Diabetes and a lot of chronic conditions would benefit from that multidisciplinary approach over different disciplines and expertise areas. I think that's just fantastic how we're doing that. Well, you know, we've kind of kept y'all a long time, and we've covered so much basis. I would love for y'all both to take some time and maybe give the listeners some take-home points.
I guess I'll start. So knowledge is power. So the more you know about pain and how it occurs, that's one level of knowledge, and hopefully we've enlightened you that way today. The other way is to be insightful to your reaction pain. So people with different kinds of baby, are you okay? Don't do any more. You might hurt yourself. So we can develop a kind of a too much fear around movement or pain. So I like to remind people that your spine is strong. If you feel like you've hurt yourself, begin to self-test in small ways. Coming back to Beth's initial, when she talked about her own injury, you know, usually real serious damage is going to have something functional that you can't do, like, oh, I can't load my leg, or I can't bend more than 5 degrees, or I've lost feeling in my leg, or my foot is dragging, right? So these would be signs that something happened. But what we know about back pain is you can have pretty severe pain and have actually injured nothing. So that's the paradox of it, is that we are hardwired to respect severe pain, but there are lots of types of back pain, kind of like getting a migraine, that can feel really severe and turn out just to be kind of like a migraine in your back, or a spasm in response to who knows what. So we really think of motion as lotion, and beginning to move gradually and incrementally anytime that you feel like you've hurt yourself, just to start to get the blood flow, oxygen in the tissues, and your response to load.
Well, it's hard to add to that. So get healthy, stay healthy. And the underlying, I guess, emphasis is self-care. Whatever, you know, whether it be a provider or a supplement or whatever it might be, and say, what can I do on my own, and can we empower the patient or the individual, anybody, the healthy person out there, to just take control of their own care and to understand how their body functions, so that there's no, you know, we can be a collaborator with you or a coach for you, but you don't necessarily, hopefully, need our services, so to speak. So I think in the end game, that would be our, if we could say, how will we measure success if we said people don't need us anymore? That'd be great.
Yeah, that is great. Yeah. And I think
hopefully that
motion is lotion. Motion and lotion.
Love
it. A great term. Motion is lotion. I think that's move it or lose it kind of thing. Maybe motion is lotion. I love that. That's really great. Well, you guys have been fantastic. This has been so helpful. I mean, it's such a common problem, and y'all's expertise really shines through. And we really, really appreciate y'all's time today. Thanks for joining us and helping us understand this problem.
Thank you.
I really enjoyed it. Thank you so much.
Thanks for having us.
All right. Sure. Well, we may have to have you back for a follow-up too. And we really appreciate it. With that, we'll take a commercial break, and we'll be right back.
There are everyday actions to help prevent the spread of respiratory diseases. Wash your hands. Avoid close contact with people who are sick. Avoid touching your eyes, nose, and mouth. Stay home when you are sick. Cover your cough or sneeze. Clean and disinfect frequently touched objects with household cleaning spray.
For more information, visit cdc.gov/COVID-19. This message brought to you by the National Association of Broadcasters and this station.
Okay, we're back. Beth, was that fantastic or what? I loved it.
I know. I so wish I lived in Austin. I love going to my chiropractor. I've had good chiropractors, bad chiropractors. And let me tell you, Sylvia, I want her to be my new friend. Yeah, she's very sweet. Mark is so smart.
Mark is so smart, and I've known him forever, and he's just a great physician and a great person. And just the whole idea of this collaborative care where the patient's at the center, I have this vision of the patient being the center of this clinical universe for her or him, and all these experts and people that really care about getting them better and getting them back out in the world, revolving around them during their visit or their time with them, just makes me very happy, because I think that's the way healthcare should be. And frankly, I hope our listeners kind of advocate for that, you know, that, mm-hmm. you know, as they go through their health issues, whether they're back pain or other things, you know, speak up for collaborative care, because I think it's the wave of the future, and it's really, really promising to be a great way to practice medicine. And I'm very excited to have presented that whole idea to the listeners today. That was really awesome.
It was. And thank you for finding them. But, so that closes out this episode. If you enjoy listening to A Healthier View, don't forget to subscribe to the show. We are syndicated, so that means we can be listened to from all mobile devices and can be heard from the following free apps. Just search for Up to Me Radio Channel on iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, Google Play Music, and while in your car, you can listen to us on TuneIn. And of course, I'd like to thank our sponsor, Atlanta Life Media Agency. Without their support, this show would not be possible. Remember to visit our show and the other amazing shows at uptomeradio.com. And lastly, like us on Up to Me Radio on Facebook and follow us on Twitter. I hope everyone had a great time, and we'll see you next time around.